Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Oscar Westlund. I'm glad to see familiar faces and also several new faces among our students. And most of all, of course, I'm very happy to see the face that Christy has here today. Christy and I work closely with each other over the course of the past 2 years, as she is on the editorial team of the journal Digital Journalism, working from down under in Australia at Deakin University, pursuing her research into many different areas, among which places and spaces and local news media become very prominent. And I'm very delighted that we can feature Christy Hest here today in our Digital Journalism Research Group Focus Seminar Series. And Christy will give an extensive talk, having a 15-minute break around 1 o'clock, and open for some questions. She'll open a space for questions in her lecture here about place, space, and territory in digital journalist studies. So I'll leave it at that and give you the space to talk. Thank you, Christy, for being here.
Thank you. Thank you, Oscar. It's a delight to be here. I've never been to Norway, and it's a beautiful country. How many of you are from Oslo? Where else are we from? Can I get a sense of space and place here?
What do you mean? Born in Oslo or living in Oslo?
Interesting question.
Yes.
Where do you feel that you have the greatest sense of place in Norway? Is it Oslo?
Currently Oslo.
Do you have other areas in Norway or outside of Norway where you feel a sense of connection? Yeah? Anyone prepared to share?
In France, I feel connected to Burgundy in France.
Ah, okay. Family or travel experiences?
I live there 2 months every year.
Okay. Okay. All right, I'm just going to swing out of this PowerPoint just to play a little YouTube clip from one of my favourite comedians, Michael McIntyre. Has anyone heard of Michael McIntyre? This is a little skit about place and space, and it really resonates with what I do as a researcher, and it goes for literally a minute, just to put it into perspective.
Google Earth is amazing. They photographed every road in the whole world, and they put them on Google Earth on the computer, and you can go there, you just type it in, and you go there, you drag a little man over the map, and you drop him into the road, and then you're there. You can see it. It's really amazing technology. And you sit in front of the computer, and you think, I can go anywhere, anywhere in the world. Where shall I go? And we all come to the same conclusion. My house. Even though you're in your house, it would be far easier just to get up, walk outside of your house, and look at your house. A live 3D image of your own building. But no, you're so excited, aren't you? First, you don't land exactly on your house. You're sort of, where is it? You have to move around. There it is. That's our house on Google Earth. Darling, come and look. Come and look. Leave the kids. They're fine in the bath. Come and look. That's our house. It's our car.
So today's presentation is really about the power of place and how I look at it in the context largely of local journalism, but also digital media environments, particularly news media spaces. So I feel it's important in a conversation about place to tell you a little bit about who I am. So I'll spend the first 5 minutes talking about my work, the way I see the world, how I study journalism. And first and foremost, I want to introduce you to the town where I live. And it's called Warrnambool. It's hard to pronounce. And it has a population of about 40,000 people. I actually was born and raised in Warrnambool. I have a very deep sense of place with this area, and to the point that I have returned to live in this area with my husband and 3 children. My family is in Warrnambool. And I feel that it's a nice central centred base for us to be, so much so that I travel quite long distances to work at the university in the closest metropolitan centre, which is about just under 3 hours away. So that's a little bit about me. And when I was thinking about how I would showcase my place, these are some of the beautiful images that represent Warrnambool. I take my children to that beach. If you ever want to come and visit me, I'm very open to taking you along the Great Ocean Road, which is a natural wonder of the world and attracts millions of tourists each year. And I'm also proud to announce that Warrnambool was this week listed as Australia's most livable city. How's that? Pretty good. So that's just putting it into perspective where I come from and where I live. So in terms of who I am as a researcher, as I said, a lot of my time is spent looking at the role and place of local media, local journalism, and the way we connect with each other through news media. I started researching in this space probably about 10 years ago, and there's been a dramatic increase in scholarship around the local. I think as people try to come to terms with what's happening with the state of journalism globally, there's a focus on shifting back to the local, which serves as sort of like a little petri dish in which we understand society. But the important thing about the local is that it's very context specific. So what happens here in Norway might not be applicable to where I am in Australia and vice versa. So I've had to look, I went back to basics when I started researching the sector because there was a strong correlation between local media and the notion of community, which is a wonderful idea. Community is a wonderful idea, but it's actually, it's a concept imbued with power. So people can use the idea of community and construct the idea of community for their own advantage. And as people in society, we all like the idea that we belong to something, that we are a part of something bigger than ourselves. And what I did start to realise was that there was some very discrete but important distinctions between some of the terms that are used to describe local media, such as local, community, and place. So in terms of my scholarship, I see myself as a critical cultural sociologist, and it's taken me probably the last 3 years to really work that out and sit comfortably in that space. And I often largely look at journalism and news media through a lens of media power. And basically that means the media's power to construct reality. And today I'm going to wade a little bit into discussions about the intersection between space, place and territory and the importance of placemaking. Another thing, just to backtrack in terms of how I see local journalism, is that conceptually I've positioned them in terms of a geosocial structure. So, and this is going to speak to the way I do understand place and space coming from a local media perspective. It's very important that we move away from physical geography, of course, in a digital environment, but we should never discount it, and we should always have it on an equal playing field when we talk about the very idea of place and space. So I'm interested in the importance of geographic territory, how it shapes journalism, but also how local media are situated in global information flows and particularly nodes and positions and channels of power. And by the way, if anybody has any questions as I go, please don't let me just ramble on. Just pop your hand up or just sing out. Okay, so and just one thing in terms of the importance of physical geography in Australia, it's still incredibly paramount in terms of the way we understand digital information flows, but also local journalism. If you have a look at the terrain, in Australia. It is so quite distinctive depending on where you stand in the world. So this is Western Australia with, you know, deep red, red earth. This is where I live, which is a dairy country, and to the that side is a town called it's an opal mining town. And as you can see, the terrain is very sparse, and the population is quite transient because there are people coming from all over the world to mine opal. In terms of how physical geography can shape journalism, it is as simple as being mindful of the fact that in the west and the north, there are many, many cyclones and floods that infiltrate that area. In the south and the east, there are often very intense bushfires. So journalists need to adapt to their terrain, and they need to understand their terrain in order to serve their audiences. And just a little bit more about me in terms of what I'm doing at the moment. So I'm currently working on two projects that are funded by the federal government. One is looking at the future of local newspapers in Australia. So that's a partnership with Country Press Australia to examine what to do, how to innovate in the sector. It's going to be a long, ambitious study, and just like the rest of the world, we're still grappling with what to do. And the other one is a little bit, it's not a pleasant topic, but it's a very important topic. I'm part of a team that's looking at the way media help people understand really big crises in and social crises. And in this instance, it's a Royal Commission into institutional responses to child sexual abuse. There was a very, very big story that went global around Cardinal George Pell. I don't know if it made the airways here in Norway. Yep. So that's been really the big ticket item of the commission, talking about George Pell's involvement in with the Catholic Church. And George Pell was actually from a local area called Ballarat. And so the Ballarat media played a very important role in helping people work through something as distressing as this, which goes to the heart of who I am as a researcher. Yeah, so today I'm going to talk about the trichotomy between space, place and territory, which may, some of the things I talk about may seem obvious, but they're not actually adequately, or perhaps they're underexplored in journalism scholarship. And the first thing that I am working through is how far I want to challenge and join everyone else's challenge to essentialism, and the difference between becoming and being in place. So, as you can see there, and I've made these slides deliberately wordy, just so in case my Australian slang or twang is difficult to relate to. But yeah, often you know, essentialism has its challenges and it has its critics for a rightful reason, in that we are bigger than a seamless whole, and that essentialism really does overlook the way that that we socially construct place. That said, so I'm a big fan of scholars like Doreen Massey in cultural geography that talk about the you know, the way we are, we come together as networks, and there's lots of wonderful scholarship on translocal. But the emphasis tends to always come back to privileging networks over our roots and the boots on the ground approach that we might have as researchers, as industry, and as everyday people. And as I've talked to you, as I have just mentioned, there is certainly a connection to local media, to our roots, to the places where we are. Often being local implies that we are in place. there is a slight difference to notions of sense of place that can allow for more a more transient nature. We can have multiple senses of place. We can have the idea in the Australian context. So when I speak to people about what it means to be local, often they will say, well, I'm a local, but yet I've only lived here 10 years. So the real locals will say that I'm not a local. Or they'll say, well, I'm formerly from Melbourne, so I'm a former local of Melbourne, but I guess I live here now. Well, where do you have a sense of place? Probably still Melbourne. So there's differences in these concepts that are really important to understand. And drawing on Stuart Hall, I really love this quote, you know, I loosen the moorings, but I won't float. Identity is not fixed, but it's not nothing either. So I have been looking towards ideas of strategic essentialism as a way of at least trying to better appreciate the intersection between our roots and roots. And just to sort of illustrate that further, there's a really strong correlation in research on local journalism that highlights those that are more likely to be engaged with local media are the ones that have put down an investment and particularly roots. So I've done this really quite interesting pilot study that looked at why newspaper circulation had risen and in one area and was declining in another. And I looked at all the demographic factors that could have impacted on those figures. And it really came down to perhaps two points of distinction. One, placemaking, which I'll get to, and the other was the number of new dwellings and residential change in terms of buying and selling of property that was dramatically different to the other location. So it is a pilot study, but it does certainly reinforce the literature, particularly in the US, around that connection. And the other thing that I've done in understanding the local is to situate the importance of what I've termed local habitus, which I'm an old school Bourdieusian scholar. I really quite like working with Pierre Bourdieu as a baseline. And local habitus is something that is a set of powerful dispositions and practical logic developed within a place tied to physical, cultural and social dimensions. It means the place, the local, is in you. It's like part of who you are. It's embodied. And I've been able to try to make the connection between local habitus and the importance of cultural capital for local journalists. So if you have that local habitus, it can translate into cultural capital for local journalists. But unfortunately, news media tend to overlook the importance of that local connection and are increasingly centralising resources, taking journalists out of place and moving them into other areas to report from a distance, largely out of, to save money because we are in this particular environment right now. And just to give you an example of local habitus, I want to put this into perspective and how it's really important that you can only really unearth this when you do some deep ethnographic and even anthropological research. So it's a war memorial in my hometown, and it was built in 1920, and this is the angel that sits on top, and it's quite high. It would probably be, I don't think I'm exaggerating, maybe like 20 metres? Would that be about right? I don't know. It's pretty high. It sits on a hill. And underneath this column is a soldier and he's got his gun up on his shoulder like this. And when you approach this statue from a particular angle at a particular time of day, the soldier's weapon is at 45 degrees and it actually looks like the angel has a big erection. So people know what I'm talking about. Is the translation working? It's okay. People call her the dirty angel as a result. So So when I speak to locals, for example, I spoke to one local man who said he went to speak with a journalist and he said, I'll meet you at the Dirty Angel. And she said, huh, like where? And he said, I mean, what? She doesn't know what she's talking about. She doesn't even know where the Dirty Angel is. How am I going to trust her? How am I going to talk about this important issue if she doesn't even know the town very well? So just to crystallise and to put into perspective how deep and powerful local habitus can be. Yeah, okay. So moving on to place, and I just want to go back to basics. Place, simply put, is when we ascribe meaning to space, cultural meaning. Sense of place is where we have that sense of familiarity, that sense of being in place or some connection to a place that makes us feel connected and right. And as I said, it's perhaps not as fixed to physical geography like the local might be. And I guess being a Bourdieusian scholar, I'm also very mindful of the fact that there are times when we are made to feel out of place, that we don't feel in place. So, you know, Bourdieu would simply describe that as that those times when you feel like a fish in water or a fish out of water, those moments where you really feel uncomfortable, that you don't quite belong in place. So it is sense of place that has I am quite captivated by, because I have engaged quite intensely with the local, and I see that sense of place has a far more transient component to it. And so I'm also looking very much at journalism and place making, which I think is an underexplored concept in journalism studies, which is basically how journalists construct the way we see the places that we feel connected to. That might be towns, cities, but it might also be material objects. It might also be a newspaper, a digital news site. And of course, when we talk about place, it's really important that we appreciate the structure agency relationship between placemaking and sense of place. So yes, news media play a powerful role in shaping the way we understand place, but we can't ever overlook who we are as individuals, our histories, and how we come to be in the world and stand and see our relationship to others and meaning. As I said, journalists, they reinforce the way we see the world, and this is particularly important in local communities. What we have discovered through academic research, you know, beyond me, I've certainly done components, but there are so many other scholars who sing from the same songbook. There are times when we want news media to give a positive representation of place. And I listened to a fantastic presentation yesterday at a conference at Oslo Media House, where a similar industry person from Denmark, I think it was talking about exactly this, that there is so much bad news in the world. Journalists construct reality largely based on very outdated set of news values that purely highlight conflict and bad stuff. And there are times when we as audiences want a more constructive approach to the way we might understand our local places. And just to sort of give you a indication of what I'm talking about, I did show you three beautiful pictures of my town. That's how I want to position Warrnambool for you. I was going to do that because I'm not going to show you this. I'm not going to say I'm from Warrnambool and this is actually Warrnambool, believe it or not. This is aspects of Warrnambool. We have a homeless problem like every city. We have, unfortunately, beach erosion that is being, there's lots of pollution that is emerging from the water and being dumped. So I'm not going to say I'm from Warrnambool and this is how I want you to see my place. But news media will certainly give those representations. In fact, the front page stories are often about, well, actually not quite homelessness, but certainly about the bad stuff. Some of the social issues in society, like homelessness, are often sadly ignored by news media. So, yeah, as I said, there are times when it's just too much and that the role of a local journalist, people expect more. What we are seeing is a shift towards other sites that can perform that role. So in the pilot study that I talked about, we had the newspaper that had a declining circulation. Its biggest competitor was actually the local buy-sell swap page. Anyone on a buy-sell swap page in Norway? Yep. So not only were people popping up, I've got an old couch and an old jacket and I'm available for babysitting. There was a cultural shift taking place on these sites. People were starting to post images of, beautiful landscape shots of the water. They were starting to applaud behaviour of those in their community. There'd been major job losses, so there was 1,000 jobs lost at the local aluminium smelter. And people were saying, this is not who we are. You know, we can do more. Who's going to organise a meeting? How are we going to make change? And when you speak to some of the people that are contributing to the buy, sell, swap page, they feel as though their local newspaper had let them down in that respect. So it highlights an important constructivist approach to news making as well. So as a result, I've also published some work to talk about local media as civic custodians, and that can sometimes sound a little bit fluffy and oh, isn't that nice, someone's looking out for us, but custodians comes with an element of power and it can always be abused. And so I think that's a distinction in some of my work, is that I am always looking for the inequalities and the advantages that these positions of power can generate. I think in terms of advocacy, solutions, journalism, this is all really important. But we also need to consider the way journalists reshape understandings of place, how they might innovate and reimagine the way people understand the areas where they live and work. On a very simple level, it might be something as simple as, okay, we're going to work with the local council because we feel there's a way of changing the streetscape because it's really ugly and we can do better. What's it going to look like? So not quite solutions journalism, it's a reimagining of place. And in terms of the way that journalists construct reality, some of the work that I have done have looked at the difference between metropolitan media and local media in the constructions of local areas when there are particularly violent or terrible crimes that take place. So here's two examples of two towns in Australia. One was the town of Moe in Victoria, quite low socioeconomic demographics. This little boy, Jaden Leskey, was all over the news headlines because he went missing from his house. It was totally, there was media from all over Australia converging on Jaden's mum's front lawn, and unfortunately, the whole thing just got so weird. At one point, someone threw a dead pig on their front lawn about a week into the investigation. And on the other hand, we have it's the town of Snowtown. Has anyone heard of Snowtown in Australia, this far away in Norway? Snowtown is probably Australia's most well-known site of evil. So there were 9 bodies that were found in a disused bank that had been dismembered and put in barrels of acid. It was a town of about 5,000 people. And, of course, national media converged on this site and said, this is, the town of horror, the town of evil. And the local paper, their role was to say, oh, gosh, guys, don't listen to anybody else. We're not a site of evil. We're not evil people just because of what's happened here. So you can see the importance of placemaking and the social construction of reality coming through that local space, particularly in contrast to metropolitan media. It was a really intriguing piece of research to do that. It was quite disturbing. Okay, so I've talked about the importance of place and how place is basically meaning ascribed to space. So the question now is how do new spaces transform into place in the digital world? So it requires us to look a little bit at materiality and to think about how we can be connected in different ways in the interplay between, news as objects, but also our connection to sense of place and the local. Okay, so part two. And the question that I left you with is, how do new spaces transform into places in the digital world? So I look at not just the news itself, but how the news spaces in digital sites become places of meaning to us as everyday people and audiences. Some of this is work in progress. So I do appreciate, your feedback as we go along, but it's really now building on some of these ideas that I've talked about in the first part of the presentation. So in some work I'm doing with a colleague at the moment, Ted Gucci at the University of Lancaster in the UK, we are unpacking the concept of what we term placification, the array of processes and practices in which digital news spaces transform into places of meaning and significance. The term employs ification, which basically represents that process of becoming by acknowledging the structure agency of the placemaking process. In terms of the dimensions of placification, which I won't spend too much time on, but in order for space to transform into place in the news media field, we have a desire to acknowledge the tensions between structure and agency that I spoke about half an hour ago. The placification process certainly relies on periods of liminality. It relies on adjusting like the transformation into familiar spaces and community building. There's dimensions of mobility and temporality, the emotional dimension of news, and the way we project our sense of place in real time, in the physical sense, onto digital sites, which is a really important component of the placification process and shows that intersection between being and becoming. And of course, place and territorialization, which I will get to now. So, but placification, just firstly, it acknowledges that there are certainly instances that we need to investigate into how not only newsmakers bring people together in space and time through digital news products, and develop a sense of familiarity and connection, but that we need to be thinking about how we look for particular news sites, for example, that come to represent places of meaning to us. My suggestion is that we swing from theories of news engagement and habits to what I would suggest is a more richer approach in terms of practices and media rituals and the connection to embodiment and social order. Importantly, placification, it's trying to look at the why we feel connected to places rather than the how to. So we've got push notifications, personalizations of news. We've got all these tools taking place. They're all components of the placification process, but they have to be considered as part of a more holistic approach rather than one-dimensional aspects of engaging audiences. And of course, we have to acknowledge that news media, you know, the newspaper, the digital news site itself is a place. So there's some really good work by Sean Moores, who looked at the role of local newspapers in developing a sense of, you know, that real sense of place. And people were, they would sit at their kitchen table and look through a newspaper, and just that very practice gave them a sense of connection to something bigger than themselves. They would look towards the middle of the newspaper, and this is something that I replicated in some of my own work. People were turning towards the middle of the newspaper for the birth, deaths and marriages column, which is important to people who are rooted in place and want to know what's going on around them and feeling connected to community. And so in digital space, if we take something like the birth, deaths and marriages notice, there isn't a sense of familiarity on a digital news site at times, because for people to access those that information, like who's died, when the funeral is, they actually, in an Australian context, in a local newspaper environment, online they have to click through, I think they have to, with their mouse or their computer, click 9 times in order to access that information. And interestingly, Fairfax Media, which was a former owner of local newspapers, had a lot of complaints about the way the online news site looked. It didn't feel comfortable to a lot of readers. The typography was wrong. The print was too small. And one thing that local newspapers did across Australia that were owned by Fairfax was change birth, deaths and marriages into PDF versions of what the newspaper looked like. So instead of just scrolling through computerised notes of who had died, you got a PDF of the newspaper version, the printed version, and people felt immediately relieved. You know, that was the way they wanted to engage with that information. And just while I'm on birth, deaths and marriages, because it is a little like pet love of mine, if I return to local Habitus, one thing that Fairfax did, they did a great thing by putting up a PDF of a newspaper onto the online space to recognise audiences' desires. But at the same time, they decided to outsource a call centre to the Philippines that was taking those particular notices for residents. So basically, people were calling a call centre in the Philippines. They thought they were calling the local newspaper office. And someone in the Philippines would say, yes, how do I spell your husband's name who's died, Brown, like Rob Brown? And they were like, but Rob Brown's like the mayor. How could you not know how to spell Rob Brown? You know, how could you not know how to spell Warrnambool? I've got to repeat this. I mean, where's the sense of the local? So you see how this is sort of permeating through into discussions of place. And of course, something that news industry at times fail to recognise in trying to align news audiences with new habits and routines, there is often a failure to appreciate that these things take time. Our connection to the local takes time. our sense of place often takes time. So the way that we engage with news sites, that we begin to feel comfortable, it is a cultural practice that takes time. In Australia, the news industry has adopted a digital-first approach, forcing as many individual audience members as possible in the local scene to go to the online site first. But that is rocking the foundations of their very understanding of place. So it has to be almost like a Hansel and Gretel approach with the breadcrumbs. It is a slow process to get people to attribute meaning to space. Okay, so let me get to territory. And again, the one-dimensional approach to territory is that if we sign, when you register a URL or you register a web address and it's yours for $100, $100 I should say, sorry about that. Okay, so you've claimed your spot. That is your territory. That's yours. Is it, you know, it's territory. But it's not. That's a one-dimensional approach to what we need to understand, the intersection between space, place and territory. So the web address itself, the fact that you've got that, does not mean that you are governing a territory. And in terms of understanding territory, I think it's really important that we understand the digital information world as this really dynamic digital geography. Like where nodes shine brighter than other nodes, where traffic flows. Like imagine it, like the old-fashioned approach now to the information superhighway. There are cars travelling faster in one direction than another. Imagine the difference between Facebook, say, and a news site. So all the traffic's going this way to Facebook. In fact, news sites themselves are directing traffic to Facebook. And at the same time, in the information superhighway, news sites are saying, oh, that's not fair. Facebook's taking all of the advertising revenue. Like they're cannibalising our content. And yes, they are certainly taking, but we can't ignore the fact that news organisations are giving as well. And as they give, news organisations are very powerful nodes. They have the power to be places of meaning to audiences. And the more news sites do this to Facebook, the more they legitimise Facebook as a very powerful node in the information superhighway. We cannot ignore, in discussions about Facebook moving forward, the role that news media itself has played in generating and creating the beast. And it's a difficult, it's a difficult conversation at times to have with journalists, those in industry, because news media and journalists see that they're playing around in goods that benefit the public sphere. And Facebook is trading in the social sphere. So they see that they are two different marketplaces, when actually I will talk about how they overlap and how importantly news media has completely almost ignored aspects of what Facebook offers our daily lives that they once provided for us. So in terms of moving towards the trichotomy of place, space and territory in journalism studies, I've personally been really inspired by the work of Duarte, who talks about the importance of the trichotomy of space, place and territory within a political science context, not journalism studies. So I've been able to adopt some of these ideas in terms of how we think about place, space and territory within journalism. So as you can see, this is an extract from a book that I've published with Ted Gucci. For media territory to evolve, there must be always a set of distinct rules, routines and patterns imposed by the powerful to which users adopt in ways that make their territory theirs. The most important thing to remember is that you cannot territorialise space on its own. You can only territorialise places of meaning. And often in discussions about news industry, we bypass step two. So what do some of these territorialisation practices look like? We'll talk a little bit about that now. But before I do, in terms of territory, why Duarte? Why not go immediately to Deleuze and Guattari's work on territorialisation? And there's certainly aspects of this work that is relevant to a discussion like this. You can see here, this is one of probably one of the most well-known quotes from one of their texts. The territory is, first of all, the critical distance between two beings of the same species. So they've thought this through. And yes, I could have just totally aligned with that approach. But I want to come back to the issue of being and becoming. And from a media economic perspective, it's really important that when we talk about news territory and power, that there is an attempt to try to fix the territory rather than it being fluid and ever-changing, which is where Deleuze and Guattari tend to focus their approach. So just as an example, when we go to the Deleuze approach to territory, this is probably a classic example of what we mean. Not what we mean, it's a metaphor, but the dog urinating on the grass. So for a moment in time, that becomes that puppy dog's territory, his space. All right? But obviously it's going to rain, and that's going, you know, the fluid nature of territory, space and place, it's ever evolving and it changes. It's no different to this. And we all do this. When we sit on a train or we're sitting in a space in the library, we sort of put our books around. We want our personal space, our own territory. In fact, that's something that I've learnt the hard way in Norway and Sweden, is that people like their personal space, not necessarily their territory, but they certainly like their personal space. And I've had to sort of step back a bit because in Australia we're a little bit, you know, freer. So, yeah, as I said, it's really important that we think about territories as media territories as being an attempt to be more fixed in space so that we can construct places of meaning, that they become places of meaning that we can territorialise, that there are those dimensions of familiarity, that we build sense of place. And over time, that's a really important dimension here. And often when we talk about territories, the focus is on boundaries. Now, that's a very important component of place, space and territory, but it's only one component. And also when we talk about news media and territories, we tend to talk about news ownership structures. We tend to talk about the way media construct social reality, the way we see geographic territory through ideas of cosmopolitanism and the distant other. But there's less attention paid to how media territories are constructed in physical and digital spaces. So you know you're in territory when you start to adopt, like, so there's a set of cultural practices and ways of doing things, and that you adopt to that. You accept that that's what's going on in that space and that you have to abide by those rules. A classic example is the road rules. So in Norway, you drive on the opposite side of the road. But I'm going to play... No, that is a it's a territorialised zone with its own set of customs, rules and regulations. And I accept being in that space, all right? There's certainly power structures in place that are influencing and controlling those particular practices and regulations. And it's the same in new space. I'm going to, I'll put that slide in accidentally. It's jumped. I just want just that one more thing about the Deleuzian approach to territory. I've been far more inspired by Caudry and Hepp's work around figurations, which, like, in a nutshell, basically, you know, I think this summarises it. So when we talk about assemblage and networks, often we don't understand why and how places come to be. I'm just going to jump to... I just want to get to Facebook, sorry. I will just touch on this, though. How do news media territories evolve? We see three dimensions of that. So we have at the meta level where a news media outlet, going back to part one of my presentation, is perceived to be a custodian of a place of meaning. So it's really crystally apparent in the local news space, if we use that as an example. There needs to be a dependence on other institutions of power, such as the state, to reinforce news territories. So that's exactly what is going on in the relationship with Facebook right now. I'm involved in a government study, and the government is saying, we think local newspapers are custodians of the local news and information flow. So we are going to further legitimise that by giving funding to universities to look at ways of supporting that. At the same time, Facebook is saying, well, we exist in the social sphere. We don't actually exist in the public sphere. You can have that territory. We don't want it. We don't want to wade into that space. But they're being pulled into it as part of these power dynamics. And, of course, the ability to mediate our connection to and shape values, rules and ritualistic practices, which there is no better example than Facebook. So Facebook it's emerged from the social sphere. It began by this is a quote from the Washington Post. In creating Facebook, Zuckerberg had hit on Harvard's weaknesses. What it did better than Harvard was manufacture the idea of community really well. It hit on the desire for us to socially connect with each other. It was an amazing platform. It was a technological innovation. We cannot discount that. But more importantly, it met a desire of us all to connect that the news media was not adequately fulfilling. There was one aspect of the news media ecosystem that was, to a degree, and that was the local sector. It was doing an okay job at connecting people with each other prior to Facebook. And Facebook likes using the terms friend, liking. It has its own language. I didn't know the first time that I went to a buy-sell swap page and I tried to sell a couch or something really, I don't know. And people were putting F underneath the post. and I had no idea what F meant. And someone then, number five person, said, I'll buy your couch. And then there was this major, like, kerfuffle online about the fact that I had ignored the person that wrote F, and F means first. Like, does anyone know that? Did anyone know that? You know, so there's a whole discussion going on Facebook. There's a whole new language that's being created. There's a whole new set of rites and rituals that exist within this space. And it does it really well. There's some a conference presentation by a scholar, Herwig, who has looked at liminality and communitas in terms of how Facebook does this so well, generates social norms and expectations using ideas of friends and followers. And at the same time, news media has really shown its capitalist orientations by using terms like you must pay, paywall, subscriber. It's almost as if we are saying in the news media space, you must pay to be socially connected. You must pay to feel part of a community. So it's an aspect of the news media model that we need to think through in terms of, and hopefully what discussions around place and territory can offer us in the digital age. And I think it's really worth pointing out, just on that issue, Facebook did actually think of swinging to a user pays model back in 2007. So I think it was in its infancy, and there was an immediate backlash in magazines and newspapers with people saying that, you know, we're not going to pay for that. We're not going to pay for a platform to socially connect us. And my question now to you is whether or not you would pay if Facebook went to a subscription model. Would you pay for Facebook?
Probably not.
Which is the same problem news media is facing right now. So we're providing content as journalists, and the audience says, oh, well, if we can't get it for free, we can always get it from somewhere else. So I think we can actually learn a lot from the Facebook model in regards to particularly the local news environment. And, you know, going back to the social sphere, as far as I can see and in some of my other work, I do think it is one of the greatest forms of misrecognised power, and it's where legitimacy stems from and is ultimately then reinforced by those in political power. So look at Facebook. It started as a social networking platform just to connect you and I, and look at how powerful it has become as a result. The more other people in positions of power legitimise it, reinforce its role in society, the more powerful it becomes. So I think we can learn a lot from the social sphere when it comes to journalism studies, of which space, place and territory intersect and complement. In some of my other work, and I should just backtrack, because before I was an academic, I was a journalist, and I had a very interesting view of the world. I was taught to, you know, the ultimate type of journalism was the watchdog role, you know, exposing corruption, toppling governments. You know, that's the ultimate type of journalism. But when you speak to people on the ground about what it is they want in a local news context, at least, it's so much richer and deeper than issues beyond the public sphere. So I've done some work looking at reconceptualising the way we see social capital as a resource of advantage for news media, and how they can connect people across public, private and social platforms. That's me. Thank you.